Well, hello, Miss Lydia. This is me, Amberly Barcello. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. So today is November 24th, 2018. Mm-hmm. So to start off our interview, I was wondering when and where were you born?
I was born on November 24th, 1953 in Mankato, Minnesota.
Yay, that's nice. How was it like living in Minnesota?
It was amazing because we lived out in the country and there were woods and meadows and prairie and lakes and lakes and lakes. Land of 10,000, which is an underestimate. And then it would freeze.
Wow.
And get covered in snow. That wasn't as fun.
No.
No.
So, based off that, so what's like your most fond childhood memory in Minnesota?
Well, it's a toss-up. One of them I'm fishing with my grandfather, Sorensen.
Ooh.
He came from Denmark and he fished. And we went together. And then the other one is sitting on my grandmother's lap, his wife. While she played solitaire. And learning that game when the toddler. Those are very fond memories.
Mm. Wow. So what was a big ticket item that you would look forward to during your youth?
All I ever wanted was books.
Really?
Yeah. More books. Though I guess I forgot about wanting a pony. I never got a pony. But that would have cost a lot of money.
Yeah. I've always loved books. Except my mom, like, every time that I would get a book, my mom would get mad. Mm. She's like, we don't have enough room for your books anymore. So, yeah. That was kind of a downer sometimes.
Well, reading was encouraged.
What was something that you used to look forward to when you were younger?
Spring.
Really?
Really. You know, if you're frozen in a house with five very dynamic individuals, my family, and sometimes you can't get out for days for blizzards, it gets really tense.
I can imagine.
I didn't like being cold. So when everything started to melt and bloom, I was in heaven.
Well, see, that's not the problem here in Tucson.
No.
You don't have seasons. You have summer. So, I was told by Mrs. Foster that you like pulling pranks and are getting in trouble often.
Well, getting in trouble wasn't any problem.
Really?
Really. Sometimes I felt like I was in trouble just for existing.
Oh, I don't say that.
Yeah, especially at school. Teachers either loved me or they couldn't put up with me at all.
Same. I could totally relate to that, yeah. So, my question is, what is the funnest story of you getting in trouble? Because, you know, we always have that one time where it's like, that was great.
You know, the one time that lingers the most strongly for me was when a teacher called me to her desk to ask me what I was doing, because we were supposed to be practicing our spelling words. And I said, oh, I was doodling. She told me to bring my paper to her desk. And what I had done was drawn little animals all around the outside of my paper, like giraffes and horses and elephants. And she looked at it and went, oh, well, you need to doodle on your on your spelling. I'm like, spelling. And that's a lighthearted time that I got in trouble.
That's fine. So, what's the best prank your karate stuff.
You know, I don't remember them that distinctly. Pranks, no. But getting in trouble.
Yeah. trailing off of that, what would you say would be, what is the tale of your greatest love story? That's always fun.
The tale of my great love story?
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for it. I was sitting in my desk writing a paper for school, and I felt like an explosion out of the curb. You know, not noise or anything, just this energy release. And I could feel it walking towards and past my door to the house, the guest house in the back. And I'm like, I gotta go find out who that is. So I went back and it was like, breathe. And he was like, you wanna go for a ride? Or I'm like, no, I gotta go write my paper. Sorry, no fun right now. I gotta write a paper. And that was the beginning. And then it was like, we'd get really close, and something would happen. And it never really fully developed until a few years ago, and when he was terminally ill. And he passed just this past April. So it was an amazing run, but never formalized.
That's beautiful.
I told the story to his brother and sisters at his memorial, and they're like, oh, soulmate. And I went, oh, God, no. Not him. Because we were so radically different. I was raised peaceful, Christian. He was from a military family, and he was a Buddhist. And he spent part of his time growing up in a Chinese martial arts school in San Francisco, so violence, but peace at the same time. We were a contradiction.
Wow.
But it worked, sort of.
Well, I know that you moved to Arizona because of college. So why did you decide to go to college, and why did you decide to major in what you did?
Well, we never really got to decide whether or not we were going to college.
No?
My grandmother didn't get to go, so all of her grandchildren but one went to college. She insisted. And she was a very strong matriarch, definitely head of the family.
Yeah.
And it was like, just assumed, you're going, you know? No thought about it, you gotta go. You're going to get good grades, and you're going to work for scholarships. It was a rule of law. So that's why I wound up there. Why I picked linguistics? Well, after starting out in the sciences, I realized I was really a poet. With a strong scientific bent. So I logically approached, what does a poet need to know? So I went into linguistics to study language as my medium, like a painter would study paint, or a photographer cameras.
Yes.
That's my medium. And then my minor was in anthropology because humanity was my subject. And I still have mounds of poetry hidden away. Never quit writing, but decided not to publish.
So what made you decide to be a poet?
It wasn't a decision I made, it just happened.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you start writing?
At 16.
Beautiful. So what would you say would be your proudest and or greatest accomplishment?
When I worked for the Department of Economic Security in the welfare business, I'd made it to being a manager. And I was assigned to work with a community group to create a program to help the fathers of the teenage girls who wound up on welfare, help their fathers, the kids' father, learn how to be a dad, give him the same opportunities that were given to the mother. So they got a stipend, they got clothing, they got education, they got a mentor. An old actual father figure for helping our children, the boys, learn. And when I was on that committee, I was very helpful in a couple of decisions. And I put the right people in touch with each other. When the district got in the way and didn't want to work on the program, I said, go to the top, go to Mr. Hernandez, the department head. For the whole Department of Economic Security. And it worked because Phoenix got involved.
Oh.
So the father-to-father program actually happened and it worked. And as by the first graduation, you know, they'd come in uneducated, rude, illiterate, just some of them were gang members. And by the time they were graduating the program, they were wearing suits, they were clean cut. Some of them had their GEDs, some of them had actually gone on to college.
Wow.
And they, the pictures of them with their babies, their children, the connection was there. They were going to be in that child's life, you could tell. They weren't going to leave. They were going to stay.
That's beautiful.
And even one of them, he wasn't the biological father. And we played fast and loose with the rules and included him anyway. And he was the most devoted of all of them.
Wow.
So my work on that program.
Wow. Okay. Take your time.
Well, I'm proud of that work.
Sorry.
And I do choke up about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then the woman that was the head of Child and Family Resources, she actually introduced me to Raul Grijalva as the person who made it work. So I was even given credit for it by one of our community partners. I can't even remember her name, but she was this wonderful woman.
Oh.
Yeah, that's kind of the proudest I am of anything I've done.
Wow. So what made you decide to go into social work?
It was the first job offered to me when I got out of college and I was a single mom.
Oh.
So, you know, I'd go to job interviews and people would say, oh, linguistics. How many languages do you speak? And I'd know they didn't know anything about it. And it was like they were threatened by it. Because it was unknown to them.
Yeah.
So when I was finally interviewed by a woman named Hope McGuffin, she says, oh, what is linguistics and how would you use it on the job? And I thought, I can work for that woman. And that's how I wound up hired.
That's
a real job.
So
that's how I got into social work.
That's great.
I had a child to support.
Yeah. So what would you say is an event that had the most impact on you and why?
That was just I think moving to Arizona.
Really?
Yes. I fell in love with the desert.
Mm-hmm.
Going to college and studying linguistics was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met people here. Not only did I fall in love with the desert, I fell in love with the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hispanic culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I'm home.
Yeah.
Music's the same, the food's the same.
Okay.
I'll deal with it.
Yeah. I can tell, like, the Hispanic culture is very, like, homey, because, like, everyone just, like, they're like, we don't know you, but family, come on.
Yeah, family. That's the biggest connection. I was thinking about it. I come from family. It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, like, oh, familia es todo.
Yep.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah. And Hispanic culture is like, you're not encouraged to leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, you're like, oh, you're getting married. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's just add on to the house already.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move in. It's okay. No one has to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, I still get connected with my cousins on Facebook from my mom's side of the family. They're all so tight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, brothers and sisters. There's twins. But yeah, family is everything.
Yeah, I agree. So, which of your family members would you say you have the strongest connection to?
You know, I've always said my grandfather, my Danish grandfather.
Yeah.
But I'm really realizing that it was actually my grandmother, Orinton. And that I never really appreciated her. She was an amazing cook. She taught me how to cook.
Oh.
We'd have baking day.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd bake all the bread, the rolls, pies, cakes, donuts.
That sounds amazing.
To last week. And so she had different things rising at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to let things happen as they need to.
Mm-hmm.
Give it time. And she was the one who helped me when I cried.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me my strongest faith.
Jesus, McDonald. Are these many people ordering Uber Eats already?
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's Uber Eats. Really?
That's how it sounds like, yeah.
When?
Whenever someone decides to, like, order something that's, like, Uber Eats.
Oh, that's annoying. Sorry.
Yeah, it is annoying. I'm moving. I lost my train of thought.
You said something?
She was very spiritual.
Oh.
She gardened, and she grew all these healing plants.
Oh.
And she had mint for tummies, and she put burdock on scrapes and scratches, because it helps the skin heal. She canned everything, so we lived on her vegetables.
Because
totally self-sufficient woman. And she raised 9 children.
Nine
children.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then my parents pulled their little trick. Sort of, so to speak. Because they were in love and they were underage.
Oh.
And my grandparents didn't want them to marry because they were Catholic and Lutheran, and that was a mixed marriage in Minnesota in the 50s.
Yeah.
So my dad said he'd make it so it had to have
a big window.
And then I almost wasn't born because the doctor missed my mother's pelvic tube.
Oh.
So she had had a C-section. Her parents were dying.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad went to Korea.
Oh.
So I went to live with my paternal grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
So those times when I really missed my mom, because I was
and what you want to do is you want to make a box.
She was the one that was there.
I called that home. Okay, so go ahead and draw a line.
Mm-hmm. And okay. Tried to teach me everything so that I could be a self-sufficient woman, too.
Oh.
And she's the one that made us go to college. I didn't get to go to teacher's college because my sister Rachel got married. Used up all the money. You're going to go.
Mm. So I'm going to draw that.
Go be free.
And then I'm taking away your baby to make a box there. And I'm closing up my box too, you see?
So yeah, she shaped a lot of who I am.
Would you say that she's the main reason why you are such a strong, independent woman?
Yeah.
Yeah?
That and just my life.
Oh.
The choices I made set me off to be on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But poets are like that. We don't like to be around people. Sorry. At least I don't. I'm not a very social person.
Yeah. There's times where I'm like, I shouldn't be as social as I am. There's sometimes where I'm like, you need to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why I like having people around me that are like completely different. In that sense,
mm-hmm.
It's very grabby. What would you say is your best? What story of you connecting with your best friend?
The best story of my best friend is.
Mm-hmm.
Riding the vortex with Miss Beth.
Riding the vortex?
Yeah. A vortex is like an energy circle, spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And when we take off to do anything,
yeah,
we joke about time to go ride the vortex.
Oh.
And get into all kinds of adventures. And never into trouble.
Got into trouble.
But not with me.
Yeah.
You got in it once.
So what would you say is the most memorable adventure you had with his author?
I think it was a trip to Bisbee.
Bisbee?
Bisbee and staying in the Copper Queen.
No, Copper Queen? What's that?
It's a hotel that's haunted.
Oh, really?
Yes, famously haunted.
Oh, how was that?
Kind of spooky. It's like the ghost came for me in the middle of the night. She blocked me in. I couldn't get out, and they were mad at her.
Oh.
They pulled her hair and pinched her.
That's adorable.
And I'm like, but trying to lock on the door, and my cot was in front of it, so I couldn't have opened it even if I unlocked it. And then I, woke up. Oh.
Oh.
Wow. That sounds like, that's true.
Pictures. And I found faces in the pictures.
Oh.
Yeah.
That.
It's kind of spooky.
Yeah.
The first one I found, I had to stop looking for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a happy face.
Oh. See, we want the ones with happy faces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I think my favorite adventure story was that.
Would be that.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds great.
Even the trip was amazing. Just driving and riding. And,
mm-hmm.
Visiting the little village. What was the name of that little town? Outside of Bisbee on the way back.
Yeah, I forget.
It was a schoolhouse.
Schoolhouse.
Okay. Uh-huh. Those exist too?
The whole village is being rebuilt. Town. It was a mining town and a railway. Whatever they call them. Rail yard.
What would you say is the best piece of advice you've received?
Well, if I'd only listened to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
She said, don't even go
steady till you're 35. And I realized, if I had done that, yeah, I would have been a totally independent woman.
Really?
Of means. But men got in the way.
Can't live with them, can't live without them. Hey, you can live without them, but...
Well, I think it was hormones. Now that I've passed menopause and I don't have the estrogen and the desire to reproduce.
Oh, that's amazing.
Sorry.
That's great.
Sorry.
No, that's... Yeah, I can still see how that happens, yeah.
Hormones are very, very powerful. Like insulin.
Yeah. What would you say is something that has gotten better with age?
I don't care what people think of me anymore. It's like what they think about me isn't my business. I don't care. They're not going to change who I am. And they're probably thinking about themselves anyway. What they think is shaped by who they are.
I never thought of it that way.
Wow. But, you know, it's really, that's their thing. And they don't want to know my opinion of them, probably.
Yeah.
If they don't, not they're being critical of me. But I don't know. People get more fascinating the older I get. And I spend more time watching than I used to. But that's the anthropologist and the poet. Watch people. They're fascinating. They do the most amazing things.
Really?
Yeah. Like, a boy built a robotic arm out of Legos. A boy in Florida built it for a girl in England.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's the kind of things that amaze me. And we're still discovering so much about our brain.
Yeah. We know more about the ocean than we do about our brain.
I know, they just found a new part.
What, about our brains or the ocean?
A new part of the brain.
Oh.
And it's right at the, where the skull and the spinal cord connect, I mean the brain and spinal cord connects back here.
Yeah.
It's a cluster of neurons. And its function is to be aware of where we are, kinetic, motion, top of the ground, you know, just an awareness of the
being.
But it's neurons in its thinking part. So there's something going on. I mean, I'm sure the rest of the brain reads it, because it's always going on monitoring where we are and what we're doing.
Wow.
Intercepting it from the body and translating it to the brain. And we're just, this is new visualization, new, I can't think of the word. Imaging technique. The new imaging techniques are revealing so much. And then archaeology is getting better. So they're finding new things that are proving, like, humans were on the New World. The Native Americans were here thousands of years before we were thought to be here.
Well then.
And it's coming through genetics. Because it's like the first dog.
So natives had their own dogs. When the Europeans got there with their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the Native American dogs went extinct.
So the Native Americans had their own breed.
They had their own dogs that they brought with them from Siberia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's just really hot off the presses.
You're very knowledgeable about a lot of things.
It's insatiable curiosity. I want to know it all.
Really?
Yeah. But there's some things I don't want to know. It's the same time.
I don't, is that mine? No, it looks like
so
that.
So what would you,
is
what would you say is
right
like
there?
The most interesting thing you've
done? Want a different color pen.
About anything.
Red or something.
Okay, you're good.
Oh, I don't know.
Or what is like one topic that you continuously want to know about?
Oh. Neurolinguistics, the brain and language,
mm-hmm.
neurology and language,
oh.
and how it all works, you know, trying to understand my own brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, I think we all want to understand just like ourselves in general.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess that's right. I'd rather my things about myself,
mm-hmm.
as a human. Humanity, I guess. Never know enough about it.
Nope.
And we're constantly growing.
Yeah. What would you say are some gifts that you've received over the years? What would that be? That are most memorable?
It's always the love that I've been given. The greatest gift anyone can give.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very blessed in that. Coming from a family that loves each other,
mm-hmm.
to communities that work together and show love within the community. And then my grandfather teaching me to read at 3 was a gift because it opened the world to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a refuge,
mm-hmm.
a book to be a refuge, a ship to take my mind somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I was learning. All the things that my grandmother taught me about nature and healing,
mm-hmm.
that was a gift. My father teaching us to be rock hounds, to go out and look through the rivers of Minnesota, the sandbanks, and find semi-precious stones,
mm-hmm.
mostly agates and jasper and petrified wood, and because it made me acutely aware of my environment.
Mm-hmm.
And to catch little tiny details, like a flash of light, could be a stone. And it overflowed from just being rock hunting until now, I still notice things, little tiny details. And that's a skill and a gift for my father.
Yeah, so I think we tend to not notice a lot of things. So paying attention to detail mm-hmm. is like everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say you are hoping? What are you hoping for in years to come?
Yeah. Because I'm ready.
Yeah.
More of the people that I've loved in my life are on the other side that are on this side.
Mm-hmm.
My body's old.
Mm-hmm.
I have chronic illnesses. And yet I enjoy every minute. The world is so full of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
That I just want to see more and watch. And
make connections with people.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no goal other than to live peacefully in the beauty and then go home.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think that's, it's a bit morbid thinking, like, I'm waiting for death, but it's, like, it's a beautiful thing, thinking, like, being prepared for it.
You're only going to count mine, okay?
Yeah. I think not many people are. I don't think many people are.
Well, I do all that I can to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I'm really overwhelmed with my own trouble, I'll help somebody else, and that will help me.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful thing. I think there needs to be more of that.
It would be a much more peaceful world.
Yeah, immensely. Well, those are all the questions I have for you, Miss Lydia, that I can think of right now. So I think that means that this is the end of our interview today.
So thank you for interviewing me.
Of course. I think after I met you like 4 years ago, you are the most interesting person I've met. Or one of the most interesting person people I've met.
Well, thank you.
Yes. I love you. Well, thank you.
That's the reason why they're supposed to have the interview. So that they can have a loving, meaningful conversation with somebody that they haven't had a chance to do that yet. That's it.
Did you take